You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 6 October. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, I'm going to chat to Mia Kruger. I'm going to touch on that EOH update. They returned to operating profit. Victoria Rivers from Morningstar. Evolution of South African and global investment landscape. It has been markedly changing over the last couple of years, massively over the decade. And then Van Engels. Delaying retirement can double your retirement income. And there's some nuts and bolts in that I want to dig into. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. AngloGold Ashanti bumped off list of top 10 mining companies. This is obviously South African mining companies, replaced by Royal Bafokeng Platinum, and of course the iron ores, the coals, they now dominating the mining landscape. Business Day, the Fashini Group sees opportunity in SA despite stagnant economy. They're looking to open 1,000 new stores. Focus will be on the informal economy, but 1,000 new stores, it's a giant number. Morning markets, the US was green overnight, with the S&P up 1.1 and the Nasdaq up 1.4%. Asia red, Sydney off 0.6 and Tokyo down 1%. Commodities red overnight, gold 17.55, the exception, Brent 82.49 a barrel, Rand 15.05. Top 40, looking for about a 340-point red opening. That's about 0.2%. That as Tencent trades off 0.1% during lunch break in Hong Kong.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Checking now with Mia Kruger from Kruger International. Mia, appreciate the early morning. I mentioned EOH there. They came out with, it's just a trading update. It's not the results. They are back to an operating profit of 125 to 175 million. This after a loss last year of 1.3 billion and 3.3 billion in the 2019 financial year. Your take on EOH broadly, and you know, when a stock such as EOH, which was once a beloved stock on our market, collapses, do you kind of take it off your watch list?
Morning, Simon. Yes, this is a tricky one. I think, you know, we all saw the collapse of EOH, and it was shortly after the whole Steinhoff saga, mm-hmm. and it came in a very similar light, unfortunately, when they uncovered also some very dodgy dealings there. But since they've appointed Stephen van Coller to turn around the business, it seems like he has been doing quite a tough job by selling off units of the business, trying to reduce the debt, because of course, one of the things that happened when the share price plunged was the fact that the debt to equity ratio skyrocketed. And even if we look last year, we still had a debt to equity ratio company with extreme debt levels of over 580%. So this is the main concern for them. And I think if we consider the fact that they are now returning to an operating profit, where they've now for the past 2 years not had an operating profit, yeah. They've had a negative one. It seems like a good indication. They've put themselves or put a goal for themselves to increase their operating profit to 10%. And if they come through with the higher end of the numbers in the trading statement, they just short of that at 9.3%, which is a very good indication. But one of the main things, as I mentioned, is still the very large debt pile mm-hmm. that the company sits with. The company sits with over 2 billion rands of debt. And they have actually, they still have a transaction that's been dragging along due to the fact that COVID outbreak came and it made the transaction very lengthy and it hasn't been concluded. And that transaction is the sale of one of their businesses, Cybrin, which is a software solutions and online customer onboarding process that many of the banks use. Mm-hmm. And that if they conclude that will at least give them another just over 330 million to start reducing that debt further. But as you can hear, that's still a very long way from a significant reduction in the debt. So yes, it looks like a turnaround story if we consider the share price and how happy shareholders were yesterday after the trading statement yeah. came out. It does look like a positive story, but you'll still have to wait a considerable amount of time for this debt load to be reduced significantly.
Yeah, 2 billion, that's a giant number. Even with that sale, it's still, I mean, market cap's 1.4 billion, a long way to go. Profit's nice, but debt is their concern. Quick question on the Sanlam Absa deal. Essentially, Absa selling their investment product services to Sanlam Investment Holdings. A big deal in terms of the numbers. From the market perspective, it's, I suppose so. The market was, you know, neither of the stocks did anything in particular.
Yes, you know, it's firstly something you'll have to go read through, and I checked it out very quickly, but it does seem very straightforward in the terms that Sanlam is basically taking over Absa's investment business, not only the investment management side, but also the life product, which is the LISP platform, and they are also going into a deal where Absa will now be selling on some Sanlam's investment products. So this is a deal that then will run for 10 years, and they'll see how it goes and whether they want to extend it after that. But it does seem like a big deal. This will actually bring the combined unit to over 1 trillion rands of assets under management, administration, and advice. So if it concludes, obviously it still has to be approved by the Competition Commission, and we'll have to see how that goes. But it is probably one of the bigger deals in this area of the market that we've seen over the last couple of years.
Yeah. Gives them a trillion of assets and puts them second behind a PFC and 91. Mia Kruger, Kruger International, thanks very much for the time this morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Turning now to Victoria Rivers, Morningstar Investment Management. Victoria, good to chat again. Talking this morning about evolution of the South African and, in fact, the global investment landscape. I mean, if you look at almost any, I mean, if you go back just a couple of years, certainly if you go back a decade, and if we go back two decades, it's like we've, you know, with respect to the industry, come out of the Stone Age. I mean, one of the key parts is the investment options, the vehicles, providers, structures, sort of the product available has just fundamentally shifted over the last couple of years. Great for investors, though.
Morning, Simon. You're right. There's been a huge shift in the landscape over the last 20 years. I've been in the industry for 20 years, so I remember those stone ages all the years ago. But if we look globally, that's kind of like ESG are really starting to take hold from a product perspective. They're serving investors well. They're focusing on many good aspects that need focus. That is a trend that hasn't transferred to the FA space too dramatically yet in the retail space, institutional to a degree. And I really do hope that it does come here. A lot of people focus on the E and the S, but I think from a G perspective, from a governance perspective, it's an area that South African investors should really embrace and look to embrace in their portfolios. Mm-hmm. I think passive investing is the other big global trend that we've seen gain momentum, which also hasn't really taken hold to the same degree in SA. And then finally, the last one globally, which has been very interesting, is US IPO activity, which really gained momentum in 2020, making it look like it's boom time and tech shares again and IPOs, taking us back to the late 90s. Mm-hmm. So here we've almost gone full cycle. But yeah, activity of over 325 companies that went public last year, you know, versus just 193 in 2019 in the tech space alone. So yeah, definitely boom time in tech shares again and tech IPOs.
325 is almost the size of our JSC. I mean, is it fair to say? I mean, South Africa has a very advanced financial industry. We do seem to lag, but my sense is we probably do ultimately catch up. I mean, we can't ignore ESG as an investment destination. We can't ignore passive. they're both growing. Perhaps we're just a little bit slower on catching up with those sort of global trends, which we are in many aspects. I mean, you know, electric vehicles springs to mind.
Yes, and I would agree with that. And I think passive is definitely something that is growing in SA, as well as ESG. And the problem in South Africa with ESG is if you look at the nature of our market, it's firstly, ESG hasn't been as obviously defined, but we a lot of retail investors say, but hey, look at the JSE, it's mining, it's banks, and it's tobacco, and it's oil. And they're focusing, as I say, more on the E and the S component of it, rather than on the G, which is to say, let's not judge a company by its industry, but let's look at it and what it's doing within its industry to focus on the E and the S and the G. So I do think it is something that's going to gain momentum in SA, and I really do hope so as well.
Yeah, and that governance is a critical. I mean, all of ESG is, but certainly the governance as well. This, of course, is I mean, it means that advisors and platforms they really need to be adapting. I mean, things are changing. The products that were available in years gone by are going to be different. Might not simply be there. That's a challenge to those advisors, to those platforms, to keep on top of it and to ensure that they are giving their clients, the customers, the best offerings.
And Simon, that's a good point you raise. And if we look at what's happened within South Africa, within the different product providers, so asset managers, platforms, advisors, financial advisors, and then even discretionary fund managers, which are a relatively new addition to the value chain, if I can call it that, or the fee chain, whichever way you want to look at it, what we've seen is some interesting trends evolve. So firstly, on the asset management side, with the material drop in interest rates we saw last year, we saw a number of fixed income funds actually drop their fees in line with the drop in interest rates, which we think really served investors well, and we were pleased to see that. The other area where you've seen fees drop has actually been on the platform side, and they really have dropped it over the last sort of decade meaningfully. But they've also, with the drop in fees, come up with a lot of fantastic new functionality. So what you're seeing on the platform side is really an increased value proposition in the form of good tech to support their platform. Advice fees, very interestingly, were on the decline. And then up until 2020, where we actually saw a pickup in the average independent advice fee. Now, we welcome that because we think the value of good advice is really the one part of the fee chain that shouldn't be questioned, because you know, that is going to determine how you retire one day. We can build the best investment portfolios, it can be on the cheapest platforms, but if your financial advisor can't keep you invested, then no one's going to get that return. But yet, despite that slight pickup, financial advisors in South Africa, their fees on average about 15 basis points lower than advice fees in the UK. So what we've seen is almost fee compression across the chain, which ultimately is good for investors as well.
Yeah, it is. I mean, this, at the end of the day, the investor is the out-and-out winner. Better products, better advisors, and better fees really does just make it a great time to be investing. I keep on saying we live in the future, and it is the same within the broader investment landscape. We'll leave it there. Appreciate the time. Victoria Rivers, Morningstar Investment Management, thanks very much for the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Vanant Ghose from Greater Tamuhura Investments. Vanant, appreciate your early morning. You wrote a great piece just last week in terms of how we can actually sort of delay our retirement, and ultimately we push it back a decade. We can potentially double that our retirement income. I mean, it struck me as a thunderbolt, particularly in a country where so many individuals, in fact, a planet for so many individuals, simply don't have enough to retire. Just pushing it back a decade can make a significant difference to our retirement.
Morning, Simon. Yes, it certainly can. And I think, you know, people are using the example of someone celebrating 100th birthday, Iris Apple. that there's so many people doing amazing stuff nowadays into the 90s and 100s, you know, choose only one example. But you're quite right. I think, firstly, you know, retirement per se is relatively outdated. It was developed in the 1890s or late 1800s. You know, life expectation then was 47. That's grown to life expectation of 80. So one is basically setting up two conundrums. You know, the one is most people, as you mentioned, don't have enough money. They haven't saved sufficient for retirement. And the second part is people are living for longer. So you need to provide for longer with a smaller pot. And, you know, one of the simplest ways to do that, you know, I'm always reminded there's only kind of three levers when you're saving in retirement. And one of the key ones is how long do you save for. So by delaying retirement for either 5 or 10 years, which practically is quite possible if you plan around it, you can double your retirement income. So it is a practical solution to a big problem for many people.
Yeah, I mean, you've essentially pulled two levers by pushing it back, is that you're saving, or slash your money is growing for a longer period. If we take a decade, you've got an extra 10 years of growth on that investment. And then, of course, your requirement is reduced because your life expectancy is then reduced because you're retiring at a 10-year later time frame.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, spot on. I mean, on the one side, over just by not saving any more to retirement, but let's assume 60 for the pot of 5 million rand, 1 million, whatever that size of the pot is. Mm. By just leaving that amount for 10 years, you can actually double it. That's just the benefit of compounding. You've built up a lot of assets. Now those assets can compound over the next 10 years. And so that is the one lever. And the second key one is, you know, when we sit down with clients, we do plan for a life into 90s at least, because there's a high probability one of the spouses or partners can live into 90. So if you retire at 60, you need to plan for 30 years.
Yeah.
If you postpone that to 70, that reduces to 20 years. That makes the world of difference.
Yeah, the big challenge then, perhaps, because I mean the math is quite simple. The extra 10 years, assuming good health, is potentially doable. Of course, we've largely got that outdated retirement concept, which says, you know, somewhere between 55 and 65, your boss is going to come to you and say, you know, time's up, thanks for the work. I mean, you've got to almost start figuring perhaps a little bit earlier as to, you know, how can you earn income in that 10-year, a side hustle, consultancy, something that you can do so that you can push it back, because you might be willing, but your company might not be.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely spot on, Simon. You know, so it's, I call it the intentional plan for your life post 65 or post retirement. And there's many ways to get an age, but one's got to work towards that. So, sitting in your 40s or 50s, you can start thinking, saying, what are you going to do after 65?
Yeah.
And the options are quite high. So, your employer might be pushing you for early retirement, if you're in the current method. And so, you need to have a plan after that. That plan could be contracting in the same area as it. It could be developing a new skill set and something that you've always wanted to do and you never followed your passions. It could be starting a side hustle now to utilize into retirement. And often what we also see is people don't always use their efforts or sweat their efforts effectively. It could be in retirement just sweating your efforts. You know, utilizing existing properties for income, utilizing other investments, in example, unit trust of shares for dividend income, with a combination of some of the other items I mentioned, but it needs to be part of a plan. You know, you can't wake up at 65 and just start a new job. You need to work towards doing that if that is your retirement plan.
Yeah, and I take the point in there. You know, you don't also hit 65 and move everything into cash. You can still sweat those assets and make it happen. We'll leave it there. Bernard Gerst, Credit Mohoro Investments, appreciate the time. A poll today on LinkedIn and Twitter, chatting there about that. Would you be prepared to delay your retirement by a decade in order to double your money in that retirement? Let us know on our Twitter and LinkedIn profiles. You can have your vote, heck no, or absolutely. And of course, you can have your comments as well. That's it for the show today. A poll which we were asking you yesterday, and you were chatting with Radisson Hotels around Level 1, and particularly the English, who are reports that they will start hitting our shores effective. Well, they will be allowed to on Thursday. They can come, but they won't have that issue when they return to the UK. Are you planning on traveling, perhaps for leisure, perhaps for holiday? 56% of you say absolutely. 44% of you say no. So that's a chunky number. That's a fair shout. It certainly I enjoy. I was on holiday just 2 weeks ago. As remember, you can always have your vote, have your say on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We are live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Nicole, Nabukhle, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.